Welcome to the Linux Ahead. This is a new video podcast we're going to do on every week. In this podcast, we are mainly going to talk about the latest bits in the Linux world. And at the end, we also cover the news or the what is going on in the Fedora land too. We'll have with me Kushal Das, Rahul Sudaram. He's going to talk about the different bits. So let's welcome Rahul into the show. Rahul.
Let's get started.
Yeah. So this is going to be the first thing. In the last few days, we are on all the news channels. Even the newspapers, you found the news about Google released G Phone, the first series of the Android. Mm-hmm. So what's your opinion about it?
It's a very interesting release. I think that most people have compared it with the iPhone release. There are significant differences between what Google is doing versus what iPhone is doing. One of the things is that Google is not releasing a phone, it's releasing an operating system. And it's making it available freely. It's going to be, at least to a good extent, open source. And that makes it Google potentially a much better carrier, potentially bringing in a lot of competition. One of the things that I noticed that Google is doing is that they are building a lot of their own apps into it, which is things like Google Maps, Google Earth, and Google this Office app software. So all that is going to be potentially a good revenue source for them because it brings them a lot more mobile carriers into the market. It's going to be an interesting release. I think for people who want to actually buy the mobile at this point, you have to buy it from T-Mobile, which locks it for 90 days. And then it's going to be only 3G only. So people who are going to be, you can't buy it outside of US. And if you get it from outside of US, you're not going to be able to use it if it's not 3G yet. So personally, I think people who are consumers should wait for the next revision before they buy it.
That means I have to wait a long.
Yeah, quite a bit. Yeah.
Okay. In the other news, we also get a new release of Xorg after like so many days. So.
Yeah, one of the things that connects what Fedora is doing was with what Xorg is doing is that the Xorg release manager this time was Adam Jackson from Red Hat, who is usually called as Ajax in IRC. He was the release manager for upstream. We were planning to do the Xorg at some point. Release was actually planned by Adam to coordinate with Fedora 9. Unfortunately, Xorg got delayed a bit. So in Fedora 9, we shipped a pre-release version. And because we also had to change the ABI, third-party proprietary modules did not work when Fedora 9 was released. We got a bit of heat for that. But NVIDIA supported that pre-release because they were just waiting for a distribution to ship it first. ATI still does not support it, even though 7.4 is stable and actually been pushed out into Fedora 9. One of the things that happened when we pushed out is that we disabled EVDev, which is their driver, new keyboard driver. So it kind of broke in between. There was a regression, and then we fixed it to follow upstream. So we are now, Fedora 9 is probably the first distribution that ships 7.4 in a pre-release and 7.4 in an update after that. That was an interesting thing to watch, I think.
Yeah, basically we saw that most of the major projects, Fedora is always ahead into releasing the latest stuff.
For a lot of projects like Kernel and Xorg, Red Hat is the number one contributor, so Fedora tends to keep up with the latest stuff. I think it helps a lot that we ship the latest stuff to users first and get the feedback early on. It tends to be kind of rough for some users at times, but I think it's overall a good thing to do. 7.4 had a lot of features initially planned. By the time it shipped, we had to cut down a lot of features, but I think the timely time-based release structure of Xorg is better than what it was before, so that's a good thing.
Okay. By the way, something came in my mind that if you are a music player, if you're having a music player and if you by any chance use the Rockbox, the free version, firmware on it, so for you, the latest release is already done. Rockbox 3.0 is out for you guys, so go ahead and install it to just listen to music.
One of the interesting things I would mention about Rockbox is that when Jim, our new Red Hat CEO joined, there was this question about, okay, how affiliated is he with free and open source software? And he did an interview with one of the media where he mentioned that he is using iPod with Rockbox for Rock support. So that was fairly interesting news. So Rockbox 3 has been a long time coming. It's been over 3-4 years. I think it's a very good news that we get free replacement for players which you can not get otherwise, good support for Org and other free formats.
Okay, so it's only a few days when the Linux Pumblers conference just went ahead and it is done. And there we saw a very new feature coming up, like boot your computer within 5 seconds. So what is it about? I never saw it yet.
Arjun Van Devan, who was a Red Hat kernel engineer for a long time, is now working in Intel, in Intel's open source center. Him and another, his colleague, mentioned, Arjun Van Devan is on the Fedora devil list, and he, in one of the discussions about, okay, can we stop some of the services to, can we disable some of the services by default, like sendmail, Arjun kind of popped in between and said, you know what, I'm going to do this presentation where I'm going to boot this Fedora system in 5 seconds. And people are like, how the hell is that possible? It turns out that it is possible. What he has done basically is he has modified the Fedora read ahead to be more intelligent about what it reads ahead of the system. And he has modified kernel to not load things more as modules, but as statically built things. Turns out that is improves speed quite a lot. Obviously, it doesn't start quite a lot of services that usually get started by default in a Fedora, like cups and other stuff. And uses a version of an Intel desktop environment called Moblin. Moblin recently switched from Ubuntu to Fedora as their base version. Basically, it's a mobile GUI that Intel is building out for netbooks, things like Triple PC or OLPC, for example. So combined with all these things that and a number of other miscellaneous improvements, I saw a video of that in YouTube, if you can search for it. Basically, the system does boot in 5 seconds. Pretty amazing job there. And we already taking out ideas from that and making the changes in current Rawhide, the Fedora development branch, so that at least some of the boot benefits, we would be seeing it by Fedora 10. It was already a feature for Fedora 10 that better startup and faster boot speed was already a feature that was targeted. We are going to be doing it much better. Not 5 seconds yet, but we'll be good. It'll be much better than before.
Yeah, 5 seconds is just like, wow, it's done kind of thing.
Yeah, but it'll be much better than before. We got a long way to go still.
Yeah, among the other plumbers, we saw the keynote and it became a little bit hot topic in the last few days. So anything on the Greg Cage's keynote?
Greg Cage had a very interesting talk about how distributions should contribute to upstream projects and what it means for them. His basic message was that distributions that don't contribute upstream are going to be led by distributions which are contributing to upstream. So if you want actual control, and if you, especially if you have commercial interests, which most of the mainstream distributions do, you need to be supporting your customers. And to support customers good, you need upstream contributions. This was his basic message. He was using Canonical as an example, or a counterexample of distributions that does not contribute upstream much to the project that he was talking about. Since it was a Linux Plumbers conference, he was talking more about the core components, which is like Linux, Xorg, HAL, DBus, and so on. Interestingly, Red Hat turned out to be pretty much on top on all of the slides. And he also mentioned distributions like Gentoo and Debian, which are completely voluntary-driven, doing a pretty good job upstream usually than what we expect. And he talked a bit about, how distributions that are closer to upstream projects, like he mentioned Fedora, OpenSUSE, and Debian, which ship like every few 6 months, and distributions that themselves are based on these distributions. For example, Red Hat Enterprise Linux and CentOS is based on Fedora. SLES, which is the SUSE Linux Enterprise, is based on OpenSUSE. Ubuntu is based on Debian. So distributions which are themselves derivative distributions tend to kind of be disconnected from upstream. They don't contribute much compared to distributions which are top of the line and work together. So which distributions which are using like closer to upstream tend to submit patches and upstream more of the stuff, and distribution derivative distributions tend to do that less. You talked about enterprise distributions which were more or less disconnected because they were freezing at a point and then doing backported fixes instead of doing more innovative stuff. So that was the basic idea. It generated a lot of controversy and responses, but it's an interesting video to watch. I think we would include that in the show notes directly so people can watch for themselves and make an opinion.
Yeah, you can find the video in Google Video. So
we can link to that in the show notes, not a problem.
Yeah, okay, that's nice enough. Among the companies, we have two big news, I should say. Like, one is Red Hat acquired Kubernetes, and other is about IBM, how they are talking about the standards. So basically, we can IBM standards. So though I think they never talked about how OXML came into the picture and how they are like supporting the anti-group and the open standard groups. So I think this is going to be a big road ahead for them. Mm-hmm. For the other proprietary companies, even they will go obviously against this kind of notion.
Right. IBM is one of those companies which have been like for a long term very involved with all the standard bodies. They have usually people, one or two people in all the standard organizations in different committees doing standard body work. So they are pretty much leaders in this space. And one of the things I think that the impact of the fallout of the OOXML standardization by ISO is that IBM is kind of trying to distance itself from ISO as a body. Now what it's saying is that it hasn't mentioned OOXML or ISO directly. What it does mention is that if regions, countries or specific states are interested in supporting alternative standard bodies, let's say IEEE or other standard bodies, then IBM would support them in that activity. Basically, I think they are trying to kind of lessen the importance of ISO, even though they don't mention it directly. It's going to be an interesting space to watch. I think the political fallout of this move is not yet clear. The other interesting news is, of course, Red Hat's acquisition of Kubernetes for nearly $107 million, I think. That is interesting.
That is a lot of money anyway.
Yeah, it is. But for open source companies now, it's not a huge amount of money. I mean, Red Hat bought JBoss for nearly $420 million before. MySQL was acquired by Sun for $1 billion. Zensos was bought by Citrix for $500 million. So I think few hundred million is not such a big deal in open source acquisitions anymore in the last 1 year anyway. And $100 million for a KVM, I think, is a pretty strategically good move for Red Hat. One of the reasons why I suspect it's a good move is because KVM is already in the Linux kernel, and we acquire also two important products. One is the Solidized Desktop Virtualization Management Tool. Another is the SPICE protocol, which is like a replacement to Remote Desktop protocol from Windows and VNC and other protocols like that, which allows much better efficient usage of systems via management interfaces. So both Solidize and SPICE are still proprietary, but Red Hat has a long history of open sourcing code after acquisition. They did that with, I think, GFS, Red Hat Directory Server from Netscape Directory Server, and a lot of other code pieces which they acquired in open source. Red Hat has not made any statements ahead on what they are planning to do with SPICE and Solidize, but that's going to be an interesting move to watch. I think Red Hat mentioned in one of the press releases that Microsoft and Red Hat are the only two companies which have end-to-end solutions, both the hypervisor as well as the
operating system.
Yeah, unlike other virtualization-only companies like VMware, I think Red Hat as well as Microsoft in this space has a kind of a strategic advantage. Hypervisors are becoming less and less important, right? I mean, VMware is giving its hypervisor for free anyway. So the important thing is management tools. That's going to be critical to watch, right? That's important.
And in the kernel space, if you updated to the latest beta kernel, I don't remember the actual number, but if you are like trying out all the beta kernels, so maybe you heard the little bit glitch news which occurred with the E1000D. I think network card.
Ethernet driver, yeah.
Yeah.
From 2.6.27 RC kernels, if you are using the Intel E1000E, right? Intel E1000E, right? That's Yeah, that particular driver is essentially what it does is that it sends a particular signal to a particular Ethernet card, which affects the card and it kind of destroys the hardware completely. This was always a possibility, but this is the first time we are hearing of the news that because of kernel issues, hardware can destroy it. I think Mandriva in one of the older releases actually shipped a kernel which fried the LG CD-ROM firmware. It can even happen in stable releases, for at least for distributions, but this was kind of the recent news that has occurred. Essentially, if you are using one of the 2.6.27 kernel, either by compiled on your own or one of the bleeding edge distribution, development distributions, OpenSUSE development distribution, which is called Factory, or one of the Ubuntu distributions or Fedora Rawhide, and you are using 2.6.27 RC kernels, your Ethernet card might have stopped working, and you basically have to replace it. What we have done, most of the distributions have done, is that they have disabled the module now. So the latest kernel don't have this problem anymore, which is important note. And Fedora 10 is getting released in a couple of days, which is going to be disabling this module. Basically, that wired network won't work, but at least it won't destroy your hardware. Meanwhile, we are trying to fix this issue. Upstream kernel is obviously taking this issue very seriously, and they are all working together to fix the issue. It seems to be very complicated and not really simple as they hoped, but they are going to fix it. Some of people are suggesting that this is actually a hardware problem, because this should never happen regardless of what software does. Regardless of what it does, running a Linux kernel and destroying your Ethernet card is not a good thing to do after all. So,
no, I mean, yeah. That's why whoever is listening to this, like, if you never noticed this thing before, please be aware a little bit. And
we can link to the bug report numbers and other details in the show notes as well. So,
okay, so you'll get it from there. In the other notes, we have like three major license changes or licensing issues. One of them obviously is as big as like Firefox, the Firefox Aula story. It came on the news when like many Ubuntu guys started talking about and blogging that how Firefox Aula is coming in Ubuntu and why Canonical agreed to have it in there. And then the news came like how distributions like Fedora started talking with the upstream directly to change it at the first place.
One of the things that happened in Fedora 9 was that we shipped Firefox 3, and in between, for a couple of days, we had this EULA. Then we disabled it and talked to Mozilla about it and worked out a temporary solution with them, which was that instead of having a EULA, when you start Firefox, it will open up a page which would mention about the specific licensing details. Basically, Mozilla was more worried about the fact that they are shipping web services, which is tied up to Google and other providers, which are not exactly open source, right? The Firefox itself is open source, but the web services have certain privacy implications that they wanted to let users know of. So the injunctions happen to be mostly a good thing to do. But EULA, people have naturally a kind of aversion because they have seen all sort of restrictive end-user license agreements within proprietary software, and they are culturally not used to it in open source software, right? So regardless of what the content says, regardless of what the EULA says, they just panicked, right? And because Ubuntu shipped that with the EULA, this problem came up to light, and finally they did agree to change it. Now Firefox, the new version, they have agreed to drop the EULA. But the important thing to note is that there has been a traditional friction between trademark guidelines and free and open source software. This is not a new problem as such. There's been all sort of historical issues around, okay, how far do you enforce your trademark guidelines to preserve the brand versus how do you allow people to use the software according to the guidelines, right? And there's been issues like, okay, what happens if somebody ships a browser with all sort of bugs and viruses and trojans and then call it Firefox, right? This is not even a theoretical problem. It has happened. And we do need to protect it, even for distributions like, for example, if you take at a distribution level, if people change Fedora, we don't allow them to call it Fedora anymore. I mean, if the people use software from third-party repositories or modify existing software with patches, we don't allow it to call Fedora anymore. So that is a trademark guideline. So we need to figure out how to strike the right balance. We should not take it as a case against Firefox specifically, though they're kind of, I think they missed the ball in this particular thing. it's good, it should be a good thing to watch that people are so averse to ULAs, even though they do accept proprietary software in some instances. I think people are kind of culturally averse. That's the only thing I can know, right?
By the way, do you play games?
I do.
What kind of games?
Pretty much, I like I used to play this game called K Sokoban in KDE, which is like this small diamond move games, and I also play shooters like Quake and Doom. Why do you ask?
Like, you played Open Arena, and like, what I'm trying to figure out is whether you are a user of OpenGL or not.
Yeah, I am. In that particular case, that what happens is that the OpenGL implementation that we used to ship is called Misa, which is based on the specification of OpenGL, not the OpenGL software itself. But one of the long-standing issues that distributions have been kind of trying to figure out how the hell do we solve this particular problem is the fact that some of the portions of OpenGL is actually proprietary or was proprietary. It was under the SGI free B license, but it was not actually a free software license. What happens is that now SGI has been talking to distributions. I think Debian knew about this problem 4 or 5 years back. There's been a bug report filed against them. Fedora knew it a while back, and we are all been trying to work with SGI. Somehow it has not been a priority for them. And now Free Software Foundation also talked to them. Finally, they have released a new version of the license, which is similar to the MIT X11 license, which is basically say that it's a permissive free software license. The one of the interesting properties of that SGI freebie license is that if you are licensing a software under GPL, you get a choice between GPL v2 or GPL v3 and so on, right? In SGI, you don't get a choice. Whenever SGI upgrades a license, all the software are retroactively licensed under that new license. Now, because of that particular property, SGI has released a new license, which means all the software, right? All the software that was previously under this license and proprietary are now automatically become free software, which is a pretty good thing.
Yeah, so it means we'll be able to see more games coming
up. It will mean that it is more clear legally. People can use it in all sort of instruments. For example, it's not just games. It's also the CAD community, which does this 3D drawing and other stuff. They are also using OpenGL very heavily. In fact, they are the more common users compared to other gamings or any other things. They are going to get the benefit. They might not realize the benefit as yet, but it is very clearly a benefit. It's been a huge news. I don't think many news sites cover it, so I think that should be something we should thank SGI for.
Okay, and in the third news, obviously, will be the Atheros chipset.
Yeah, the interesting thing about Atheros was that Atheros for a long time was being reverse engineered under the MadBiffy project. The problem with the MadBiffy project was that they had the intermediate layer called HAL, and that was proprietary. The driver itself was not proprietary. Because of that, we could not ship it. And then later on, we took some code from OpenBSD people and then build the distribution with Atheros free drivers. Then the Atheros people decided to hire the guy who was reverse engineering the chipset, and now he's working for the company. And now, because of that, they have recently, a couple of days back, released HAL under an open source license, which is the ISC license. Pretty nice of them to do. The interesting thing about this whole thing is that now with Atheros going to be supported out of the box, it's one of the very few or perhaps the only wireless driver which does not require firmware. The other drivers like Intel, for example, the driver itself is completely open source, but the firmware is not modifiable, right? The firmware is still a binary blob. But Atheros, because of the support directly in hardware, they don't require any firmware intermediate support. It's going to be completely free and open source software without any binary blob at all. So in a matter of a couple of days, they have turned out to be a very good solution for all the people who were previously stuck up with the intermediate solution like Intel. Right? Very good news for free software developers.
Yeah, like I know a couple of my friends who use Atheros chipset in their laptops, and they are like crying after every few days.
Yeah, traditionally it's been a very huge issue. Now if you run the 2.6.27 kernel, wireless just works. I just tried it with the Triple EPC a while back, and wireless just works out of the box. It's a very nice thing.
Yeah. So now we can move into the Fedora land, and obviously we can say happy birthday to Fedora. It's the 5th anniversary for Fedora.
Right. One of the things that I wanted to note is that Fedora itself is based on Red Hat Linux, and if you count that, Red Hat Linux has been released a while back. It's been over 10, 12, 13 years. So for Fedora itself, it's 5 years as of a couple of days back. And there's been a couple of news stories around that. One is Joy Brockmeyer from OpenSUSE, who's the OpenSUSE community manager. He was previously a journalist, and he recently joined OpenSUSE as a community manager. He blogged about it in EzDNet, talking about how what he's learning from Fedora as a community project. And the thing he mentioned is that you need patience to work it. The important fact about the past is that Fedora for a first couple of years was not a very successful open source project, to put it mildly. There was a lot of friction, there was a lot of people trying, there was backsteps, missteps. People were trying to figure out how to build a community. And it took around 3-4 years before we started really moving ahead, especially with the Fedora 7, merger of Fedora Core and Extras was really the key part, I think, to move Fedora forward as a really community project. And if you look the past first initial 2 years versus the last 3 years, it's been a very, really good change to watch. And I think that everybody should note. You don't expect instant success once you released any open source project. Be patient, wait for community to follow. Work hard on building the community. Don't just think that you open CVS, everybody will come and join you. You have to work hard. You have to make a real effort before people come in. It takes some time. It takes a lot of time sometimes. I mean, whenever we release new projects, sometimes we get immediate feedback. Sometimes for 6 months, we don't get anything. And then suddenly, community pops up. So as far as Fedora is concerned, it's been a late start, but definitely a good start. I think that's a takeaway. Compared to the panic that people had when Red Hat Linux versus Red Hat Enterprise Linux happened, now I think a lot of more people believe in Fedora as a true community project, right? I think that's a very good change for Fedora.
Yeah, and Fedora 10 is coming within a few months. Like the rawhide is...
5 years, 10 releases, few million users, lot of over 10,000 packages, right? So we are doing good. We are really doing really good.
Yeah, and among the new features we are seeing, like if you run rawhide, if you're trying to install, is that if by any chance Anaconda is crashing, it's giving you the options. Going for Bugzilla.
Yeah, right. One of the major features that Anaconda had previously is that when you had a Anaconda bug, it would show a traceback, and then it will ask you to save that traceback and then file a bug report. A lot of people did not consider this as a very easy thing to do, because saving it, you need quite a third-party medium, and you need to save it properly. It took a lot of effort. Now what has been done is that we now have an option to save directly from Anaconda to Red Hat Bugzilla. It obviously requires an internet connection. There is also a slightly more, still a barrier to entry in that you already require a Red Hat Bugzilla account before you file a bug report still. I think the Chris Lumens, who is working on this particular feature, is trying to work out a feature where you don't require the Bugzilla account in the future, but still now, for now you require a Bugzilla account. But if you already have a Bugzilla account, it will ask you a username and password. You enter it, it will automatically file a bug report. You can move on, right? You can.
Yeah, I mean, for that feature, somehow we have to enable the network, maybe some through system-level code or maybe network manager.
Yeah, but a lot of people who are doing like network installation and other things are usually connected, right? But the important thing is that this feature goes along with this new feature of Anaconda using network manager as a wireless API instead of its network code. It is for network code is using network manager instead of its custom network code it used previously. So wireless is consistent during installation as it is post installation. It's not like wireless is working. Wireless would work even during installation now, and that's going to be a good feature because it makes Anaconda more modular, which has been a long-standing design factor that Anaconda has been doing. They are spitting more and more features out of Anaconda into system-level components, right? And with combined with Network Manager, the Save to Bugzilla feature is going to be a really good boon for users who are power users or testers who are trying to have these things. They will be more easily able to file bug reports. We can't fix the problem immediately then for that particular installation, but for future revision, we can fix the problem. So if you hit a problem in beta, there is a good chance that it will be fixed for the preview release and final releases, right? That's a good thing. along with that particular feature, I think another feature is that Federer Nayan at the last minute introduced a new feature called pre-upgrade. Have you heard about
pre-upgrade? Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, what it does is that it does a live upgrade, right? It downloads the RPM packages, you run this command called, install this package called pre-upgrade, run this pre-upgrade command from the command line. What it does is that it brings a GUI up, does a wizard which downloads RPM packages, and then boots Anaconda and points Anaconda to the local hard disk copy of the newer packages. And then Anaconda does the final step of upgrading. It's kind of like a live upgrade, but much more safer. The problem, of course, is that there was still a difference between live this pre-upgrade and if you do a regular Anaconda upgrade, which is that Anaconda had this feature called whitelist and blacklist, which is that if you don't really want some package to end up in the next release, we will blacklist them in Anaconda. And if you want to allow some few packages, we will whitelist them. We had these things that work around some of the complicated issues that Yum could not work around. That problem was, that particular logic was only in Anaconda. Now what they've done is that they split up this logic into Yum modules. And Anaconda provides these modules. And pre-upgrade can use the same modules. So the upgrade experience is very consistent regardless of whether you are using pre-upgrade or regular Anaconda upgrade. That's a very nice thing. I think when pre-upgade was originally released in Federer 9, a lot of people did not use it, and people who did use it ran into some of the bugs. And pre-upgade is much better now. For Federer 10, we are also connecting it with PackageKit. So when Federer 11 is released, PackageKit will tell you that, hey, a new release of Federer is available. And then PackageKit will prompt you on your desktop. And then when you click on it, it will call pre-upgrade, and then you can do an upgrade, live upgrade directly. And that will be the same thing, same consistent experience as when you do a regular Anaconda upgrade. That's a very nice thing to have. I mean, it's been historically a long-standing issue that people have talked about Federer 2, and we have solved it finally for Federer 10. And combined with this PackageKit feature, it's a very, very nice thing. We will be calling pre-upgrade. Other distributions can call their own distribution utility. We'll be supporting that out of the box. I think people will only realize this feature when Federer 11 is coming out, right? But it's going to be a very nice feature. The other thing is that the rescue mode has been much enhanced with a new project called First Aid Kit. First Aid Kit is a modular project. It has a lot of plugins. What it does is that it allows you to rescue your system for common scenarios. There is a wizard for a lot of common scenarios. So if you want to, for example, reinstall your master boot record, previously it would dump you to the CH root and then you have to do things by hand. Now you have a wizard which does more of the things automatically. It does not work on the live CD environment yet. We still ship it, but for the preview release, I think it would also work on the live CD. So you can use even the live CD as a rescue environment. And when you move into this first aid kit mode, you will have a wizard which guides you through a lot of common tasks, which I think that's going to be more helpful to the less technical users who run into...
Yeah, like simple general users.
Yeah, people who run into all sort of issues because they did things they should not have been doing, or something bad happened, they can more easily recover now. That's a very nice feature.
Okay, and in the desktop land, we saw that GNOME 2.24 is out and market, and KDE 4.1.2 is already tagged.
Yeah. These are the major desktop environments that we have been shipping with two different live CDs, desktop live CD with GNOME and KDE live CD. And KDE in Federer 9, KDE 4.0 was released, and KDE 4.1 was also released as an update. So it's not a new thing for Federer, but...
Yeah, I mean, we also got 4.1.1 even.
Yeah.
It's already there in the update repository.
Right, and 4.1.2 is obviously going to be pushed as an update for both Federer 9 and Rawhide as well. So it's not a new feature, but for people who want the first initial experience was kind of wrong for KDE 4. The KDE 4.1 experience is much better. So for Federer 9, we're going to be shipping that. GNOME 2.2 is, as usual, not a huge change. It's a minor change compared to the previous releases, or at least compared to KDE, but it's a very nice change. There have been a number of features. They finally finished the migration to GPFS. They included a new instant messenger application called Empathy. Empathy uses the telepathy framework for the plugin support for a lot of messengers. They support voice and video for XMPP Java protocol, which means that if you are using GTalk, Empathy will support voice and video out of the box. They are also planning to add support for other protocols. I think SIP is supported already, but Yahoo, MSN, and others are coming up. So that's going to be a good change compared to Pidgin. Pidgin was till now kind of the default messenger, but not really. Finally, they have a default messenger, and Fedora 9 is shipping with Empathy. At least in the beta release, we are going to be shipping with Empathy by default instead of Pidgin. We are still evaluating what we are going to do with in the final release, but the feedback from the beta release should tell us how well it was working. Right?
Yeah. In the other hand, Hans did a pretty nice job with the webcams. So
right. Hans was a volunteer up until recently. Now he has been hired by Red Hat for the Anaconda team. Hans was proposing this feature and is still working on it. Basically, he wanted to make sure that more of the webcams were supported out of the box, which was not the case with Fedora 9. Interestingly, Upstream also merged the UVC webcam drivers in 2.6.27, and Hans did some of the work in merging GSPACA module version 2 in 2.6.27. We were planning to patch the Fedora kernel because it was going to Upstream anyway, but then Upstream picked it up directly, so we did not have to patch the kernel after all. And this module have been shipping as a module in Livna and other repositories for a while, so people had to install this as a third-party module. It would not work out of the box. Now it would work out of the box. There's been still some issues. We have been working through them. So if you know of issues, file bug reports from the beta release, and we'll fix them by the final release, hopefully. Not everything works, but most of them should work, which is a very nice thing for webcams. I mean, all the features would work. We have very good support, not crappy code like it was previously.
Okay, and in the audio world, we got the GStreamer release and like with that Pulse Audio, the right. Glitch-free thing.
Right. Well, the thing was that Pulse Audio was previously interrupt-driven. Now it's latency-driven. This might sound like Greek, but what really it means that your audio is going to be more glitch-free. What it does mean is that if you are running multiple applications, your sound is less likely to stutter. Right? This was the case with other operating systems like Apple, Macintosh, and Windows Vista. They also use something very similar, which gives them better power savings, less latency, and less glitches or dropouts in the audio. So that's a new feature that's coming up. The other related feature to not related to Pulse Audio, but multimedia on the whole, is that previously, Fedora used to ship this application called Codiana, which would point to Fluendo codecs. The MP3 codec was free, but not the other codecs. What it did was, we could not actually ship the codecs from codecs like GStreamer, plugins Ugly, or Zine Extras, and Emplayer, or VLC, because even though they were free and open source, there were still potential patent issues with this code. And the only way we had to avoid this problem was to educate the users, right? Educate them about why we did not ship. So the Codiana was two things. One was it would tell the user why we did not ship it, and then we would provide an alternative. People liked the education message, but did not like the alternative of paid codecs, right? So what we did was that now we are dropping that and then replacing it with the RPM feature so that GStreamer will come and it would provide the RPM dependencies. So what it does is that by default, if you do something, the codecs, if you don't support it, it is not going to work. But if you have a third-party repository enabled and they are providing the codecs, package will automatically prompt you and say, hey, these codecs are available. Do you want to install them? It's just one click away. It will just work out of the box after that.
Yeah, I mean, we also saw a new release for RPM. And
yeah, that's been a very major release, really. I mean, for a few years, RPM was kind of stagnated or going along different directions, and Red Hat recently relaunched, along with Fedora Project, a new version of RPM. And we have hired Panu, who was used to be the upstream release developer of apt-RPM. Now he works on RPM itself, and he has been doing a lot of good work, fixing a lot of bugs, long-standing issues, introducing new features, solving some of the missed features, and making the whole process much better. So I think even after the... we are going to ship RPM 4.6 in the final release, but what we are shipping now is the alpha version, so that we are testing out a lot of features. We can back out still. So if something horrible happens with this version of RPM, we can still back out. Yeah, that's going to be a nice feature.
Okay. And we also merge the, like, put the path slash sbin into for the user so that they, you don't have to do actually give the full path for the commands like ifconfig. So you can just type ifconfig as a simple user and you will get it in your next release of Fedora. So in the, for the artist teams, we saw that we are trying out the eco icon set. And we also did the vote for the next themes on the Fedora art.
Right. Both of these features are very interesting. Echo was developed for a long time, and it was still not completed. Now it's still incomplete, but it's kind of more mature. So we are trying it out for beta release. We do not know if it's going to be the final release. Echo is really nice set of icons, fresh set of icons being developed very hard by the art team, volunteer members from the art team. A couple of people are working really hard to make sure that the icon coverage is complete. We are also not just covering just GNOME, but also KDE. So both KDE and GNOME will have the same icon set. And we'll be covering all the Fedora-specific applications as well, with upstream my icon set of missing. We'll be covering that. So we'll now probably have a more complete coverage of a consistent icon set than before. We have some debates about that, whether we need to ship it in the final release or not. But for beta, you will see that. You can offer your feedback on what is wrong, what is right, what you think about it. One comment is that you should be offering specific feedback so you, artists know what to fix. The other change was that this time, in previous releases, there was 3 rounds of artwork being done for the theme, wallpaper, anaconda, splash screen, and everything. By the time we came to the 3rd round, only 1 theme will be left. And obviously, that's the winner. But this time, we had 3 different themes, so we had to pick one. So our team finally did a vote. And Solar, right? Solar is the theme that won the large number of votes. It's been a very nice theme, really nice theme. You should check it out. It is not in the beta yet, but it will be in the preview release. We are also shipping artwork for all the different backgrounds, the 3 different rounds of artwork. We are shipping all the backgrounds for the 3 rounds. So you can try it out if you want. If you suppose you don't like Solar but some other theme, you can check out the background from the theme. It's already packaged and available in Rawhide. But Solar is going to be the default. Very nice theme, very nice theme. Good work.
Okay, and in the last few features we are coming up, one obviously would be the playmout and the KMS support.
Right. Till Fedora 9, we have been shipping this thing called RGB, which stands for Red Hat Graphical Boot. What it does is that it plainly just starts X server, right, and then starts working through it. What usually happens is that first you see some text message, then you see X starting up with the RGB graphical mode, then you see login prompt, then again your display manager starts up, whether it's GDM or KDM, then you finally have to log in again. Now with the support for kernel module, kernel mode support, what happens is that Xorg, instead of setting the poking the hardware directly, now tells the kernel, do this mode switch. And because of that, we now have flicker-free boot, at least in theory. What really happens now is that this kernel KMS, kernel mode setting support, is not yet there in the kernel yet, and it's not stable, very stable. So you have a somewhat flickering boot still, but when this feature is finally done, you will have a very nice graphical boot without any flicker. And it has a lot of additional, because of KMS support, there's a lot of additional benefits like flicker-free fast future switching and other features. If you are running graphical boot and say you have a kernel crash, you don't even see it. You just see X hanging, right? Now you will see the actual boot message, the crash messages in your screen. So a lot of new features, a lot of consistency, a lot of good work. With Playmout and KMS, we are going to see flicker-free boot, plain, nice, flicker-free boot. Other distributions are also planning to use it. It's a free desktop software. It's not specific to Fedora. And unlike RGB, it does not start a X server all by itself. So it's fast. It's going to be smooth and nice experience for end users. It's not there yet for the beta. You won't see that in beta yet, but by the time it's done, it's going to be a really good feature.
Yeah, so I guess we talked about, I think, most of the features we are planning to do right now.
Right.
And anyway, you know, like, we both are planning to do this talk, Linux Ahead, for the last couple of weeks, and the rest could make it.
Right.
So this is the first week. Here we are right now. We'll try to do the same video again and again. So
every week?
Yeah, I mean, every week is a good time, nice time. So Rahul, thanks for giving us so many details.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure. Very nice thing.
Okay, so we are trying to put, currently you will get the video only in org, so we'll try to upload it into the other places. So let's wait for the next video, and please give us some feedback what else you want to see in this video talks and what you're missing, or maybe how we can improve the talk more, maybe technically, maybe for the end users. So we'll be waiting for your feedback. Thank you once again. Bye-bye from Linux Ahead.